And a pleasant good Monday morning to all of you out there, ladies, gentlemen, fanatics of all ages, all of our friends. Thank you once again for tuning in to this week's episode of Phillies Therapy. My name is Paul Boyer, joined as always by The Athletic's Matt Gelb. Coming off of a weird, wacky, wild, and wonderful series win against the New York Mets over the weekend. They probably didn't deserve it, but you know what? They won it, and that's what matters. The Phillies are 40-37 after whatever that was. They're now heading out into the middle of the country for a little quick three-gamer against the Cubs before coming back home at the end of the week to play the Nationals. Now, mercifully, they get to skip Marcus Stroman this week, which is nice, and then they play the Nationals, who are the Nationals. So maybe this is a chance to bank a few more wins. And Matt, hello, first and foremost. How are you? How was your week?
I'm still wondering about Buck Showalter.
Me too, man. What's going on? It's the same stuff from 10 years ago with Zach Britton.
Yeah, and some of it is like roster construction, right? I mean, there's only a couple of relievers on this roster they trust, and they brought
Drew Smith suspended, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, like they brought in a guy who was like going to go to med school and sign as an undrafted free agent. He pitched two scoreless against the Phillies, and you're thinking, okay, I mean, it's like, you know, as a whole, I mean, I thought it was a rather terrible series for the Phillies.
Oh, yeah.
They probably should have been swept.
It wasn't great.
You know, they really scored all their runs via two drop fly balls on Friday night. Saturday, they, you know, really let Scherzer off the hook. And Sunday, they sent 10 men to the plate in an inning, had one hit, and scored four runs. So, you know, I don't know. But these are games the Phillies have lost in the past, and instead the Mets lost them. So you take it for what it is, and you go to Chicago, which – I feel like it makes you think of the last time they went to Chicago, and that was like, you know, really truly a low point of last season, and it was with like, you know, 2.5 weeks left. And
absolutely.
After Chicago.
Morrell. Yeah.
Yeah. After Chicago, life changed quite a bit.
Yeah, man. Like, they're winning so ugly that it's hard to get like too excited about when they do. You know, we're talking about five straight one-run wins over this stretch where they've gone, you know, 8-3, stretching back to the middle of the Arizona series. And it's like, you can only count on that for so long, right? It's why some of us are looking at the Marlins and thinking like, oh, that's going to crack and crumble eventually. You can't win that many one-run games, have that just be the basis of your identity. And it's not even just the one run wins, because you know that's fine. If you're winning close games, typically you're getting good pitching when it matters, or you're getting a nice hit when it matters, and things are going right, you are still winning the game. But I think when you look at this team as a whole, and you look at the way they've played over the last week and a half now, they have this winning record, and they're getting back into the, you know, not really the division race, they're solidifying their standing in the wild card race, and it's just not inspiring a ton of confidence, because it seems like, ironically enough, the sum of its parts has been greater than the whole, if we can twist that saying around a little bit. There are so many things that are just not quite going right, and things that just should be better if you want this team to really make itself a contender or improve its standing. You know, I look at Bryce Harper in particular, right? The guy who always draws the eyes, who always draws the attention, and who needs to be playing well, you would think, for this team to continue to contend. And you look at what's been happening with him. It's now 25 games since his last home run, which is absurd to think about.
Longest of his career.
It's ridiculous. He hasn't been a complete vacuum, you know,
he's drawn some big walks. I mean, he drew a walk to start that eighth inning,
right? You know, .354 is his on base percentage in those 25 games. Again, that's not nothing. That counts for something.
Yeah,
but his slugging is .280. We're talking about Bryce Harper here
for a 25 game stretch. I mean, it's
got
to be the lowest. I'll look this up, but yeah, that's got to be the lowest 25 game stretch slug of his career.
So Matt, the thing that concerns me about this, I guess, isn't so much a physical thing, because he's still getting in the lineup. He's still taking his hacks. He doesn't really look physically uncomfortable when he swings. He's not, you know, striking out a ton. He's striking out what seems normal for him, what seems normal for Bryce Harper, you know, somewhere between 20-25%. That's fine. What's getting to me, I think, and we saw this over the weekend when he got ejected, he seems frustrated by this. And that's not typically been his thing. Like he plays with his heart on his sleeve, and I get that. But when he's been a little bit less productive, we haven't really seen moments like, I think it was maybe Friday or Saturday when he got ejected, when it just bubbles over. Because again, it's not like he's been a zero, but something isn't right. And I think we can sense it, and it seems weird to feel him or to see him almost kind of tacitly acknowledge that something just feels off. Is there anything that you can see that seems just different? I don't really know. It's so confusing to me because it's a player you don't expect this from, that I'm trying to find an answer that might not be so evident.
I think his time is just off. I mean, he has hit so many balls on the ground. And that's I think, he ended that eighth inning on Sunday against Vinny Natoli, Philly's legend. And he got a pitch to hit, and he hit it pretty hard. It ends up being a deep fly out to center field that ends the inning. And I was watching Bryce, and like I don't think he ever got to first base. He comes to first base, and he just puts his hands, like both of his hands over his face, and looks up to the sky. Like he was really upset because I think he thought he should have hit that pitch out. But I thought it was sort of encouraging because he got it in the air, and like he has not been doing that. And I don't know. I mean, he's still, like, you look at some of the underlying stats, right, Paul? And like the exit velocity is close to being there.
Yeah,
like
pretty
the
good.
Barrel rate is pretty good. Like,
yeah,
is all of the expected numbers are good. I would say I'm not overly concerned yet. What I would say this is that, like, he just really, really needs to hit one over the wall. Mm-hmm. He needs to hit one over the wall, and I feel like everything will be better for him and for the Phillies. I don't know when it's going to happen or how it's going to happen, because he's been trying for, you know, the better part of a month to hit one over the wall and hasn't. I think when he hits one over the wall and sees it goes over the wall, I feel like everything will be better for him.
Well, you'd think so. I mean, I think back to the end of last season when he was struggling coming into the playoffs, right? Yeah. And then he parks it in St. Louis, and it's just like, all right, see ya. Yep. He took off and became the best player in the world.
And that was it. Yeah.
So yes, I would agree with that. I would think we just need the one. It's sort of like what we've been doing all year with Turner, right? You're waiting for the game for the game Turner takes over. Maybe Sunday was it. I don't know.
I feel Sunday like Sunday was this. It. I wrote about it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we've done this two or three times now, but
I know. And I acknowledge that, but I think it was interesting to hear him talk about all the work he'd done like the 2 days prior and leading into that first swing, which he thought was the best swing he's taken all year. Mm-hmm. And it was the hardest hit ball he's had in almost 2 months. So that's something.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, the lineup as a whole needs the pop, right?
Yeah.
We're talking about
how about this? Can I give you a good one? This is,
yeah.
They've hit one home run in the last 2 weeks with a runner on base.
It's not going to get it done.
No. And when you're talking about how it just doesn't feel right, I can point to one thing, Paul. They're not hitting home runs. That's why it doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
And like,
not just Harper.
Yeah. Right. And I've never thought about in this term until Robert Orr, the fine writer for Baseball Prospectus, tweeted about this over the weekend. And he's like, it's basically like a basketball offense that can't hit threes right now.
Yeah.
And I never thought about it like that. And, I'm kind of a hoops head. I don't know if people know that, but, it's such a great analogy. That is what the Phillies are right now. I mean, it takes them so many walks and hits strung together to get any kind of rally, or in any, or if it's against the Mets, it's like a bunch of walks and hit batters, but it's just not a great way to be living.
No.
And it is why it doesn't feel right, because man, the pitching has been, you know, on an aggregate, I mean, it's been fantastic. Like their rotation has really stepped up, and this is why it is a team game, right? I mean, like, there's going to be periods of the season where certain units are not going good and others are. And the pitching has really, specifically the starting pitching, has really picked up the offense here, because it has not been good. And there will be a stretch in the, near future, I'm sure, where the rotation is kind of shaky, but then they start hitting home runs and they win crooked, you know, weird games. And so, I don't know, but I mean, I think it is reasonable to look at the roster and the lineup right now and wonder, like, where is that power going to come from?
Well, I mean, I'm just looking at the table of the offense right now and all these things. And Kyle Schwarber is leading the team with his 20 home runs, and that's great. Nobody else is in double digits.
It's do you know how many Braves players are in double digit home runs already?
Oh, it's gotta be at least five.
Seven.
Yeah. Like even the guys who aren't performing well or who weren't performing well at the start of the year, you know, you look at somebody like Michael Harris, right? Like he has six home runs all of a sudden. He's going to make his way into the double digit club. I'm surprised Orlando Arcia doesn't have 10 home runs the way he just shows up and clocks the ball. And then you have the rest of the lineup. Matt Olson, it seems like all he does is hit home runs if he gets a hit. I think I saw a fact five of his last six hits have been home runs. And it just, it's frustrating.
It's time to stop comparing to the Braves, because it's very clear that, like,
well, yes,
the Braves are the best team in the league. They might be the best team in baseball. They are a machine. And they're going to win the National League East. They're going to be the favorites, most likely, going into the playoffs to win the National League.
Uh-huh.
And you can totally see why. They're on a different They're in a different class right now, and it's everybody else in the National League.
And just, yes, all right, the comparison probably should stop. I agree with you.
No. I mean, it is stark, though. I mean, you look at it, and you just kind of shake your head. I mean, it's crazy, the kind of level that they're at right now.
I think the thing that gets to me is I look at the Phillies, the way they're constructed, and I feel like even though they don't have a lot of guys who you would expect to hit 30 home runs, they have a couple. It just feels like they should have a little bit more pop than they've had. Because you look at, you know, even Nick Castellanos, who has been the team's best hitter, probably you could say, throughout the full season. He's been the most consistent for sure. He's only got 9 home runs. Now he's got 23 doubles, and that helps. But he's not in double digits yet. That's a guy you could expect, you know, 30 home runs from. He's got the size. He's got the strength to do that. He has done it. And then nothing else. You know, Harper only having 3 home runs in his half of a season.
200 play
thus far. Yeah, 200 play appearances. Like, that's weird. But even Turner, you might have thought Turner could have 10 by now. You might have thought JT could have 10 by now. You certainly would have hoped Alec Bohm would be slugging higher than 401. Given, you know, the offseason storylines around him and the way he looked to start the year. It's just one of those things I find myself wondering, like, is it, I don't like dipping my toe in this water, but I'm just going to think out loud. Like, is it something to do with conditioning? Like, is it the point of the season where they're losing that bit of strength, like the players usually do, where they hit the middle of the year toward the later end of the year, and it's just like the grind is really setting in, and they lose a little bit of what they put on over the winter coming into the season? Like, I'm just trying to figure out why some of these guys who are strong and have game power are not seeing it translate this year the way we would hope.
I don't know if you can make any sort of like sweeping assessment about the lineup as a whole. I think it's an individual thing. Like, you mentioned Castellanos, and yeah, does he have the capability of hitting 30 home runs? Sure. But I look at him and I see a guy who's more of a gap-to-gap hitter at this point. And that's not to diminish the value of that.
No, not at all.
I think there's a lot of value in that. He's slugging almost 500. I mean, it's just a different kind of slug. I don't think he's going to hit 25. He may not even hit 20. I don't know. Home runs. Not. But he might get 40 doubles. And I don't know. I mean, there is some value there. But it's okay. So you kind of cross him off, and now you're looking like, where can the power come from? And I look at the corners in the infield as, to me, the most concerning spots.
Yeah.
And you mentioned Bohm, and I think Bohm at this point, there has to be a reasonable amount of concern about, you know, what this guy is and who he is and what you can expect moving forward with Bohm. And yeah. It's just, you know, it's right about where he was last year, right? He's slugging 401 right now. He slugged 398 last year. And so now we're talking about a sample size of 899 plate appearances, right? 900 plate appearances, essentially. And he's a 400 slug guy. And that's fine. But if he's not an elite defender, which he's not.
No.
And if he's not an elite on base guy, which he's not.
He's not. Oh.
You're kind of left with a replacement level ish player. And you probably need more than that. I mean, but you can carry a guy like that if you're getting, you know, above replacement level at other positions. And right now, you know, Stott's been a really solid find at second base. Like, he's playing great second base, first of all, and he's hitting for average. He's also not going to be a guy who hits for power.
Yeah.
But he's been solid. And Turner, if he's who you think he'll be in the second half, you know, you're above replacement level there. So that's fine. You're getting good production up the middle. You know, center field, Marsh is, you know, not what he was in April. We didn't expect that, but he's still overall above replacement level player. Real Muto is Real Muto. So you're solid up the middle. And now you look at the corners, and the corners on the infield especially are a place where the Phillies need to find some power. And yeah, I don't know if it's going to come from Alec Bohm. I mean, like, is Alec Bohm, is the version of Alec Bohm we see right now, is that who he is?
Well, here's the thing that troubles me. And you even extend what you were just talking about beyond and go back to 2021, where he slugged 340, 342 to be exact. Like, it's a huge sample at this point, and my wish casting is over. I think we now need to think a little bit more about the hard facts of the situation and what you might be able to do. So his slugging back to 2021, 1,300 plate appearances, is 381. And that won't get it done, like you were saying. That will not get it done. I don't really understand.
Context, the Phillies rank, Phillies first base, and Bohm has played bounce around, so it's hard to...
Yes.
You know, so you have to look at both spots. So first baseman, the Phillies are 10th in slugging in the National League. And third baseman, the Phillies are 12th in slugging in the National League. I mean, that is a difficult profile to carry when you're a team that is looking down, that is built around power.
Yeah. And his strikeouts have gone down, which is good. And some of that contact has been more in the air than on the ground, which is also good, but it hasn't been solid contact. So it's been more easy flyouts, which is not great. The thing that really stings now, and another Braves comparison, here we go. what Alex Anthopoulos is so good at is maximizing the value of his chips without overexposing them. You look at somebody even like Apache, who jury's still a little bit out, but maybe Shea Langeliers, who is okay, but not really doing that well early on out in Oakland. They were the two main chips for Matt Olson, right?
I know where you're going at here. Yeah.
Right. What is Alec Bohm's value to any club right now? That sounds so harsh, and I hate it because I know the guy works hard, and I'm sure this is as frustrating for him as it is for some of us to watch. But we now have this massive sample of plate appearances. We are looking at a big, significant body of work at the major league level. And you have a corner guy who, like you said, is not an elite defender. He flashes some good plays at third and first base, but he's not an elite defender, who is not an elite on base machine, and who does not have game power, significant game power. What do you do with that? He is not an elite trade. He's not a blue chip for trading. He is sort of inflexible on a roster that desperately needs to create designated hitter space for other guys ahead of him. What do you do with that? Do you have to just keep playing him until somebody's just like, all right, we'll take a chance? Like, what do you do?
I mean, that's literally your only recourse right now is to keep playing him and hope that it improves. And if it doesn't, then you cut bait. I mean, I think they probably missed the boat on trading him. I mean, there was a lot of,
I think so,
chatter about that. I mean, there was chatter coming out of 2022 spring training. I mean, he was available like to anyone. And you'll recall that. It feels like forever ago, but I mean, out of 2022 spring training, he had a really rough spring and his confidence was not there. And, you know, he was in a position, you know, he was in a roster fight with Bryson Stott and ended up both making the team, of course. And, you know, then you have the 3-hour game and then, you know, then there's the turnaround and I'll give him credit. I mean, his defense is better. I mean, like it's definitely better and but it's still not average. It'll always be below average. And so, yeah, I mean, I think you've missed the boat on, you know, like a trade. And I think your only recourse is to just keep trying to make the adjustments and hope that something sticks. It's disappointing because, I mean, I think This is a guy who's drafted where he was, third overall for a reason. And we've seen bits and pieces of it over time. We just haven't seen him put together the package for more than a month at a time, right? The complete package. And there's a lot of cons right now to the idea of Alec Bohm being a viable everyday player in the big leagues as opposed to any pros. What are the pros right now? I don't know. He's young. Yeah. He has a good, pedigree. It's not good. And this is just a snapshot in time. And for all we know, we see a better version of Bohm in the coming weeks, but the overall picture is a concerning one. And again, it's because you mentioned it, Paul. I mean, the roster is rather inflexible, and I don't know. I mean, I think there's been a lot of if you're looking way down the line, there's been a lot of thought about how much the Phillies miss Rhys Hoskins right now, right?
Sure.
That right-handed power in the middle lineup. And it's like, if you were going into 2024 and Hoskins is healthy and you're going to get, a decent version of Hoskins, which again, we're all making assumptions here. Right. Who would you rather have on your roster, Hoskins or Bohm?
Well, I take Rhys, of course.
Even with the positional inflexibility?
Yeah, because I think what we're looking at here and this coming winter, I think, is going to be very interesting, but that's probably a topic for, closer to that winter. Just looking ahead, I did think this coming into 2023 that there was going to be a little bit more change, and that didn't necessarily take shape, but I think this coming winter, some changes are probably going to need to be made.
But if you're bringing Rhys back, then how are you going to make this thing work? Because you've got Schwarber needs BEH, and you've got Harper who could be a first baseman or right fielder or DH. I mean, Bohm playing at least like a passable third base, is what makes him sort of important to the Phillies right now, because there's not really anyone else who does that.
Yeah. Look, I think what happens is my pet theory, based on nothing, is that I don't know if Schwarber comes back. It's complicated, but I think in the immediate term, and I think this is what complicates the plans around, the theory going around that Paul Goldschmidt might be a trade target or somebody who's just like first base. I'm like, no, because we're talking about roster and flexibility, right? If the plan is Paul Goldschmidt, say, you want to acquire him, first of all, you have to get the outlay to acquire him because he's a really good player. And what are you trading to get him, first and foremost? Then you bring him onto this roster. Assuming you didn't part with any of your regulars at the major league level, how do you fit all of that? What do you do with Bohm? What do you do with Bohm? You play him at third base every day? I don't know if that's their plan. I don't know if that's something they're comfortable with. And then what happens to Sosa?
Can I give you a hot take?
Well, sure.
The Cardinals aren't trading Paul Goldschmidt.
I don't. Well, they might. I can go back and forth on that. I don't know if they would, but I think the Phillies are out on that anyway. I don't see the fit.
They have
I don't
too see many. No, works. There's no fit. There's no fit. It does not work. And I don't think he's going to get traded.
Yeah, I mean, they can make another run at it next year. Exactly. They've still got a lot of talent.
It's the Cardinals. They're not. They may trade some pieces away here if they really decide they're out of it, and they probably are out of it, but I don't see them trading Paul Goldschmidt.
But it bringing it more broad and more general, I think you need to have an eye on that sort of positional flexibility kind of thing, and like real positional flexibility when you're talking about importing somebody, when you're talking about making a trade as July takes shape here. Because if you have somebody who's just locked into one position and it's a corner position, there's a lot of other stuff you need to account for, a lot of other moving parts. Yeah. And it just doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to lock in another player at one fixed position or DH when you already have so many guys who do that.
Yeah. And that's why I think at this deadline, you're looking for a rental type, right? You're looking for some right-handed pop that is a rental that, can play a corner spot. And if you're locking yourself into that guy for 2 months, that's fine. Right. Yeah. You figure it out. And they do have a plan, right? I mean, Bryce to first, Bohm to third, Schwarber to DH, and that opens up left field. And I would imagine you can find a right-handed hitting left fielder with a little bit of pop. Like, that's not a huge ask, I don't think. And I know there's different names have been bandied about, and we'll see. I mean, I think it's impossible to even like speculate on trades right now, because literally we do not know who's going to be selling. We don't. I mean, I don't know. The central divisions really, really make this complicated, because both in the AL and the NL, because I don't think you can, you know, I don't think those teams are necessarily going to be selling unless it's the Cardinals. If they really feel like they're totally out of it, which I don't know if they will feel that way. Have you seen the Reds rotation? I don't know. I mean, I was looking at the Brewers, who are currently tied with the Phillies right now.
Yeah,
they have their number two WAR producer right now. Can you guess who it is?
On the Brewers, the pitching staff,
on the team as a whole, but it is a pitcher.
I don't. Is it going to be somebody like? Oh no, Brent Suter's not even there anymore. No, who is it?
Julio Teheran.
Oh, that's right. Oh, they brought Julio Teheran back from the dead.
He has a 1.53 in 6 starts. Anyway, the Brewers are dead last in every offensive category this year. Not home runs. They've hit more home runs than the Phillies, which is funny. But they're 15th in runs, 15th in batting average, 15th in on-base, 15th in slug. They're tied with the Phillies right now. But they're like a few games out in the Central. And like, I don't know, they might not sell. So the central divisions in both leagues are really going to make the deadline confusing, and it's really hard to speculate who's going to be available right now. So I think right now, okay, if we're talking about next year, we're talking about the deadline. How about like let's talk about like in the immediate, the next, you know, 4 weeks, 5 weeks before the deadline. What are you trying to do to make this better? And I think one of the answers you have to look at is like, do you pull the Derek Hall lever? And I think they're going to consider it. I mean, like, the reason why Hall wasn't brought back right away is because they like what Cody Clemens was doing. And I think, Paul, you alluded to this in a tweet. Don't look at what Cody Clemens has done in the last, 2 weeks.
Oh, boy. Oh, more than that, man. No,
it's two for his last 28 with a double. And it's probably getting time to, like, just swap them, right? And that's okay. Like, Clemens goes down and plays every day at AAA. Hall comes up, maybe gives you a little spark like he did last year, maybe not. I don't think Hall can come back until Thursday. I have to look. He was optioned and he has to spend 10 days in the minors.
Right.
Unless he's replacing an injured guy. So I don't think he can come back until later this week. And that, you know, so it's not like this is a transaction they could make today or tomorrow. So
right.
I do think it's something worth considering, don't you?
No, absolutely. I would be surprised if it doesn't happen.
Right. And it's not to say that Derek Hall is like a, you know, like the fix to everything that ails them. I don't think that it should be portrayed that way.
No, I think the bigger problem is that we knew Cody Clemens was probably not an everyday player. We had suspicions that Edmundo Sosa was probably not an everyday player. Sosa earned the shot to be an everyday player the way he started and has, you know, sadly been exposed. The problem.
When do you think, how many more strikeouts until Edmundo Sosa gets a walk? He's at 43-2 right now.
I just,
He got through a 3-0 count at some point this week, and I was like, oh my God, it's gonna happen. It's gonna happen. It didn't happen.
No, man. It's tough. Like, he's a guy who can tap into a little bit of game power when he makes contact, but his swing decisions are just so bad right now. They're just so bad that he's thrown away at bats.
His swing decisions are. He's swinging.
Yeah. No, the problem that this team has is that there are so many guys who are not surefire regulars, guys who you know can handle 5 starts in 6 games, even, or more than that.
Like, are you putting Bohm in that bucket now?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I think you have to. Yeah. And it saddens me, but I think you have to demote him to that level. You know, you have JT, you have Turner, you have Castellanos and Harper and Schwarber, who are everyday players. They are major league caliber everyday
probably
players.
Probably there.
Stott is moving up. Yeah. I'm being a little conservative with him because he's still new. But yeah, he's getting there for sure.
Yeah.
And what are the two spots where you don't have a guy that you know is a regular that we're talking about?
First and third.
First and third. And those are big spots to have a vacancy. So I think their options are not great. You know, Hall isn't an everyday player. You know, he's a platoon guy. He mashes righties, right. But the lefty, he started out okay against lefties and they got hurt. I think the jury's still out there. They need something that's a little bit more reliable. Can't keep platooning everybody, especially at so many important positions. Can't expect isn't the right word. You can't rely on somebody who can just disappear for 2 months at a time offensively. And that goes for Bohm, that goes for Sosa, that goes for Clemens, like that
Harrison.
You can't put too much faith in guys who are either no longer or never have been everyday players. And that is the problem.
They probably have to pull. They got to pull the hair. I don't know. Not having a, Sosa was, for a few weeks was the guy, but not having a right-handed hitting infielder to help here has been a problem. Harrison and Sosa have really disappointed. They tried the Drew Oss thing and he had one good game and that was cool. But Guthrie's gone. And I think Guthrie's a fine 26th man. I think you could have argued keeping him over Harrison, but I don't know. You're splitting hairs, I guess. I do think it's funny that Gabe, just like last year when they got rid of Luke Williams, Gabe was the one who ends up with the right-handed hitting utility guy from the Philly system.
Gabe Kapler, of course.
But yeah, Harrison disappointing. But I think it's been disappointing is that they haven't had a lever to pull there, right? It's like, oh, okay, somebody AAA is a better option for us. So let's just do this. Let's release Harrison. Let's go with somebody else, a different right-handed hitting utility guy. Kingery was going into the season. They thought maybe he'd be that guy, and he's just been okay. Hasn't been great.
Yeah,
just okay.
Yeah, he's been fine. Like, he's the guy I idly thought about the other day. Not that he's a slam dunk improvement, but just that.
What if you try it? Yeah.
What if you try it? I mean,
it's hard to be worse. It's hard to be worse. It's hard to be worse than, the aggregate of like Harrison, Sosa, Guthrie, put them all, mash them all together. And I don't know how many plate appearances it is, but the numbers are not good. I mean, it's almost 300 plate appearances between those three guys.
Yeah, that's a lot. And this is sort of like an organizational thing, a pattern, almost regardless of who's been in charge for the last 10 years or so. There is this hesitation when it comes to losing guys who had proved at some point that they're major league contributors, really just generally guys who are out of options. It always feels like there's this really like, oh, we got to be sure before we pull this lever, because once you DFA Harrison, he's gone. Like, I would need to look up his exact rules around
outrighting,
because he's over 10 years.
He takes free agency.
Yeah, exactly. He's made a lot of money and he's not giving a lot up if he refuses the money, if that's even eligible at this point. I don't know. Regardless, he'd be gone. He wouldn't go to AAA. Not for the Phillies, anyway. And I feel like the team just, when it seems like it's time for a move with somebody in that position, whether it's the guaranteed money or you have to expose them to waivers and potentially lose them, like they hold back until they're really, really sure. And sometimes that works to their benefit. Sometimes it's to the detriment. Like that's baseball, I guess. They're doing that with Harrison now. I think it's been fait accompli for, at least a week that this is a guy who probably doesn't have a spot on this roster right now. If we're serious about needing a part-time guy who can play a few positions, right-handed hitter.
Right. But it's one thing. Again, it's one thing to say that he shouldn't be on the roster. It's another thing to say, okay, here is the replacement.
We know who replaces him. Exactly. Exactly. It's a multi-part problem.
They don't. I mean, maybe somebody comes on waivers and they like him. I don't know. It's not obvious. And again, this is something you can address at the deadline, but if you're looking for something to fix right now in the immediate, for this 5 week stretch here, it's not obvious.
Well,
and I think Hall comes up. I mean, they really are victimized by this point that like a lot of their best performers at AAA all bat left-handed, Jake Cave, Simone Muziati, Derek Hall, all left-handed hitting hitters, which they have a lot of right now. So we went over the numbers against lefties, last podcast or two podcasts ago, and it's not great. So, I think what would be encouraging to me is that there are clearly spots where they can upgrade, right? And the cost of upgrading is not prohibitive.
No.
You know, we're talking about a rental right-handed hitting corner outfielder. We're talking about a right-handed hitting bench upgrade. These are little moves around the edges that may not seem significant, but could be pretty helpful for the Phillies because, again, the bar is low. I mean, they've been below replacement level, on a lot of spots on the roster right now. And there are places where they can upgrade and not for a huge cost.
And that's what gives me hope, right? Like, I remember talking last week, not totally ruling out some kind of big move, even though I didn't have a good idea of what that was at that point. I'm walking that back a little bit. I think the last week or so has really kind of crystallized that, you know, what you're talking about is the need, right-handed hitting in some form or fashion, whether it is both a starting caliber left fielder and a bench bat, or if it's just a bench bat, I don't know. I think a lot of that depends on how they feel about Harper playing the field in a few weeks. You know, the next few weeks are going to be really big for that. And we'll see how that goes. That's another bridge to cross. And how he's going to play there. Like, is he going to be playable at first base? I don't doubt he's putting in the work, but hey, we haven't seen it before. We don't know how it's going to go.
No, we don't. Do you know what they need?
What do they need, Matt? What do they need?
A time machine for Rhys Hoskins.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Did you see Nick Maton got optioned?
I did. Yeah, because they signed Johan Camargo to a minor league deal, too.
Oh, my God, they did?
Yeah, they did.
How about David Robertson saying that the other day was one of the best days of his life? He got his ring, and then he got two double play balls to get a save against the Phillies. What an ultimate... He seems like, I don't know, like Dave Robertson. How is he going to be remembered? Kind of like...
Oh, boy.
I mean, because the first contract was so bad. Yeah. And then, you know, people were kind of like looking back at the trade and like, I wish I wouldn't have done that. But, you know, he did get some big outs to him and he saved game one of the World Series. And then he went and signed with the Mets. It's like, how are you going to remember this guy?
Was any of that, apart from signing with the Mets, his fault? I would say no.
No.
He didn't choose to get hurt. He didn't choose to get traded for Ben Brown, who...
No, he didn't.
Seems like he could be an interesting arm, but is walking the world for the Cubs.
Oh, is he? I haven't even checked.
Yeah, he's walking a lot. But he's interesting. He's a power arm at least. And if they get that figured out, then okay, fine, whatever. I like David Robertson and I don't hold any ill will against him. Like you said, he closed out a World Series game and that should be it. Like that's it. That's how he should be remembered. Will he be remembered that way? I don't know. Signing with the Mets complicates that. I understand. It's kind of like Billy Wagner going to the Braves, you know, in so many ways, or Brad Lidge going to the Nationals. But I hold no ill will. Honestly, what can I hold against the guy? He got hurt. The money isn't mine. I didn't pay for him and it was covered by insurance. Probably. Who cares about that? He comes back to the team. Yeah, he's a little iffy, but he closed the World Series game. Like you said, that's it. That's where it stops for me. That's where the period hits.
To go full circle here, and I'm sorry for bringing up all these random things, but Harper has a 280 slug, right, in his 25-game stretch, mm-hmm. and that's the worst he's had in a 25-game stretch since 2016.
Since 2016, okay. Wow.
So he had a little stretch. It looks like he had about two stretches in 2016 where he really just did not hit for power. And what did he finish with that year? He finished with a 441 slug and 24 homers.
Pedestrian for him.
Yes.
Well, okay. It's so hard to make anything of him because you look at the season line, getting back to Harper here, and he's a 399 slug, which stands out as weird. 286 average, 390 on base. That's normal for him. I don't know. It's weird.
It is weird, but I also think that he just needs to hit one over the fence. Just one.
Just one measly dinger.
We went this entire podcast without talking about pitching. It's great.
It is. No, and I think that's like, it is refreshing because I guess we can talk about it now. Tyrone Walker has been so much better. He got his ERA below Nola's. Like, that's the kind of run he's been on here. And the bullpen's still been good, even though Alvarado is accelerating in his descent back to earth a little bit here. And there have been times.
How about the little crotch thrust? That was kind of weird, huh?
He's a weird guy. He said
the dugout was talking shit to him.
Oh, really?
That's why he was pissed. And I was like, okay. But I don't know. Kind of weird. Weird timing. He'd given up a home run and, like, you know, down by three. Like, you know, weird timing. But, you know, Alvarado, he's a passionate guy. You know, he's going to do whatever he wants.
He's clearly got beef with the Mets, and we need to have beef with the Mets in order to make things lively. You know, like
the guy that he had beef with is gone. He's not even there anymore. Dom Smith.
Well,
but yeah, I guess he's just got beef with the Mets in general.
Yeah. Good. We all do. It doesn't matter who's wearing the laundry. Mets. We just have issue with the laundry.
I don't know. The Mets. The Phillies aren't going to see the Mets again for a while, and I don't know what that's going to look like in September.
What do you mean?
What is it going to look like when the Phillies play the Mets in September? Are the Mets totally out of it? Are they both going for a wild card spot? I mean, it's going to be, I don't think they play each other again until, September 21.
So no Braves until the 11th.
So 7 of the Phillies' last 13 games of the season are against the Mets. That could be interesting because maybe the Mets are totally out of it.
I would like for them to be. I don't think they will be. Something tells me they won't sell off. I have a hard time thinking they're gonna cut bait on a lot of guys. They should still have enough of a roster to be like pesky at the very least. Yeah. And I'm not just talking about then, I'm talking about for the rest of the season.
So one last thing, we're not going to record next week, at least the beginning of the week for the July 4th holiday. And I don't know if this is going to hold, and it's going to depend on whether there's rainouts or changes in the schedule, or whatever. But right now on July 4th in Tampa at the world's most amazing ballpark, I do love the Trop. The current projected pitchers are Aaron Nola against Zach Eflin. And I, Paul, I'm really hoping that happens. Those guys are best of friends. Eflin was in Nola's wedding. I think that would be awesome. That would be really fun.
That does sound like it would be cool. I do miss Eflin a little bit. I understand all the circumstances and everything why he left and the Phillies didn't resign him, blah, blah, blah. It's nice to see him have a good little run here with Tampa Bay. Hopefully he keeps that up and then throws us a bone and does not keep it up for that one start next week. I would appreciate that, Zach, because I know you're listening. Definitely.
I mean, I'd like to see them both pitch well and have a good game.
No, sorry, Zach. I don't share the same view as Matt. It's time to throw one.
Gotcha.
No, that's good looking ahead, though. I feel like it's been a minute since we've had a nice little clash with a former pitcher like that, just in general.
Yeah, they missed Noah Syndergaard.
They did. Phillies legend Noah Syndergaard.
Are they going to face Drew Smyly this week?
Who even remembers Drew Smyly at this point? Like, who?
Remember when the big deadline? It's a big deadline. Drew Smyly and Jason Vargas.
Jason Vargas. I remember Jason Vargas. That's for
Vargy.
Sure. Vargy. Get out of here with Vargy. All right, we need to call it. The Phillies won their series against the Mets. Hooray. They don't see them for 2.5 months. Very strange.
Very strange.
They are 40-37. Baseball Reference has their postseason odds as creeping back above 25%. Hooray. Get excited about that. They have a quick little jaunt out against the Cubs. Then they come back against the Nats. And then that Florida series, like Matt mentioned, we will not be recording early next week around the holiday. We'll get back at you later that week to recap all the wonderful things that probably happened in that Marlins series, because we know those always go well. Matt, you will be in Florida for that.
I'm doing Florida week. Phillies Florida week.
That's what we're calling it. Yeah.
Yeah. Florida week.
like Shark Week, but
Shark Week.
Grizzlier.
Grizzlier. Yes. more Great. Humid.
Yeah. More. Oh God. All right. So the Phillies have some momentum, I guess you could call it that, after losing 2 out of a phantom 3 to Atlanta. I guess that's just the reality we live in now. They'll beat everybody but Atlanta when they need to. Still work to be done, still roster holes to be patched up and things to address as July creeps in. And we are certainly going to have a lot to talk about as July matures and we get closer to the trade deadline, which I think is August 1st. I need to actually brush up.
Yeah, yes.
August 1st. The Phillies are an imperfect team in playoff contention. Does that sound familiar? They need some guys to step it up before they can really address what they need in trade. So I think hopefully it's just a matter of dominoes, whether it's Harper hitting a home run or Alec Bohm getting out of whatever's sapping his strength, or maybe Trey Turner for the third time is beginning to go on a bit of a run. Who knows? We'll see. We should know more in a week and a half, and we'll catch you then. Hopefully you all have a nice holiday here in America. Enjoy your 4th. Enjoy the fireworks. Enjoy a nice little cookout or barbecue. For Matt, who's always got good stuff over at The Athletic, go check him out. For Matt, I am Paul. We'll catch you in a little bit. Go Phils.